without further ado, the amazing, incredible, very good day.
Dad!
Teddy trailed into Lupin's bedroom at 6:30, dragging his tattered old blanket behind him.
I'm hungry. Let's go eat.
Breakfast is until 7:30. Go back to sleep,
mumbled Lupin. Teddy ignored this completely and cheerfully climbed up onto the bed.
Wingardium Leviosa!
He snatched up Lupin's wand and tried to levitate his blanket in the air. It rose a few feet and then collapsed on top of him.
Teddy.
Wingardium Leviosa!
Shouted Teddy determinedly from beneath the blanket, and it shot up to the top of the canopied bed and stuck there. He began wailing. Lupin sighed and decided he might as well get up. Lupin hadn't a clue what to wear to this female doctor place, and no muggle clothing either. He'd be damned if he'd asked Quentin, who would find it quite funny. So he settled on his least wizardly appearing outfit, a pair of brown trousers that, while certainly old-fashioned looking, could pass as muggle wear, and a white dress shirt and tie. Thank God men's clothing hasn't changed that much in the last 100 years, he thought, but he didn't know what to do for a jacket. One of the perils of the 15th floor, he thought as he and Teddy got on the elevator, was that there were many stops on the way down, and only 3 floors that contained anyone he ever wanted to see. He preferred to apparate, but it tended to startle the servants, and Quentin had told him he was tired of them coming to him bawling and having nervous breakdowns. Kenny, unfortunately, was already on the elevator. He was whining horribly, and Henry was leaning against the wall, looking disgusted. Victor staggered on at floor 14 and gave Lupin a venomous look. Lupin just smiled politely back at him. Approximately 3 weeks after his delighted proclamation of their upcoming divorce, Victor had decided he wanted Elizabeth back, apparently realizing no other woman would ever put up with him, and when he'd heard about John Richard, decided the divorce was all Lupin's fault anyway.
"Couldn't fuck Henry," he mumbled.
"No, you drank it all last night," snapped Henry.
"For God's sake, Kenny, stop that damn whining."
"I'm tired," moaned Kenny. "My head hurts and I don't feel good. I need some OxyContin, dude. I'm like fucking dying here, man."
"Shut up and die then,"
Henry replied unsympathetically. Kenny was like this every morning. William and Rosie clambered in on the 13th floor, and Lupin waved his wand to enlarge the elevator. This had the desired effect of putting Kenny and Victor much farther away from him.
"Why you got up like a muggle, then?"
Rosie immediately demanded. Lupin thought to himself he should have known she'd be the first to start prying into his business.
"Going out?"
"Where?" "Nosy Rosie, nosy Rosie,"
cackled Kenny.
"It rhymes, man!"
"Shut up!" yelled William, but Kenny just fell down on his back and rolled around, cackling louder. William gave Lupin an evil look.
"What do you send Percy that owl?" he demanded.
Lupin looked at him very innocently.
"What owl?" "The one where you told him to leave Elizabeth alone. You were going to put a curse on his dick."
Everyone burst out laughing except William, who kept glaring, and Kenny, who backed away from Lupin with a look of utmost horror.
"There's a dick curse, dude? Man, don't ever put that on me, dude. I'll do whatever you want,"
he shouted desperately.
"He shouldn't keep bothering someone when his attentions aren't wanted,"
Lupin replied loftily, ignoring Kenny's outburst.
"It's quite rude." "He's my boss, remember? He was really pissed. He started stomping around the office and made everybody stay 2 hours late." "Perhaps you can use the overtime to take Rosie out to dinner."
"Oh, I do want to go out to dinner,"
squealed Rosie, and William shook his head in disgust. At least the 12th floor is empty, thought Lupin with relief. This had been Carmine's floor. Thank God Quentin killed that fucker. The 11th was the servants' quarters, and they had their own elevator. They stopped at the 10th, and Jamie clambered on with his book bag and a briefcase. He brightened when he saw Lupin.
"Hey, can I ask you something later?"
he asked him very cheerily.
"Well, I'm not going to be here today. Maybe at dinner?"
"Sure."
Jamie started grinning, and everyone eyed him suspiciously. He was always horribly crabby in the morning.
"What's up with you?"
demanded Rosie.
"Wouldn't you like to know?"
"Oh, everyone and their stupid secrets," thought Rosie angrily. "I'm finding out every one of them." At the 9th floor, Shala and the quadruplets got on. Shala and Jamie pointedly ignored each other, but Nicholas started hanging on his leg, and Natalie began spewing out a very involved tale about her doll, the kitten, some string, and the bathtub. Rosie gave Elizabeth an interested look when she got on the elevator. She wore a rather low midnight blue silk blouse that accentuated her eyes and cleavage, and a black silk skirt with a slit up the side. Her hair was curled in very loose waves, and she had on long dangly blue earrings. She gave Lupin a brief smile, and Rosie thought her cheeks were flushed.
You look really hot, man,
Kenny leered at her.
I like that skirt, dude. I can, like, see your legs.
Shut the fuck up, snapped Lupin, and Rosie grinned to herself.
What do you care, dude?
Kenny blurted out. Apparently, he'd already forgotten his fear of the dick curse.
You're being inappropriate, as you always are,
he replied very coldly. Well, this is going to be good, thought Henry. Maybe that crazy fucker will turn him into a bag of weed, and Victor and I can smoke him.
You better shut up, dude! I'm not being inappropriate! She does look hot, and maybe I'll shag her, man!
That'll be difficult for you to manage when you're in several pieces,
Lupin told him calmly, and Kenny let out a shriek of fright.
You're fucking crazy, dude!
He stumbled as he tried to hide behind Henry.
He's just messing with you, Kenny,
Henry yawned. That's what you know, thought Lupin to himself.
He's not, dude!
Quit being such a pussy.
I fucking hate you, man!
Henry just ignored this. The 7th and 6th floors were Rosie and Solange's, but since neither slept there any longer, were passed by in peace. This was not the case on the 5th. Loretta jumped in, wearing a leopard print bodysuit and pigtails, and flung a grenade at Lupin. Everyone except Lupin and William started yelling with fright.
Expelliarmus,
yawned Lupin as he pointed his wand at her, and the grenade fell to the floor with a fizzling sound.
Honestly, Loretta, Elizabeth shouted, you are the stupidest person. Do you really think you can kill him? Of course you don't think of me! I'm just your sister! Nobody cares about me!
Everyone moaned as Loretta began the familiar whining. On the 4th floor, Sir Richard and Lady Fanshawe bustled in, and Lupin started wishing he hadn't enlarged the elevator.
Stop that dreadful whining, Loretta! Shrieked her mother. And what are you all gussied up for, missy?
She turned on Elizabeth.
None of your business!
Everyone was quite pleased when the elevator finally hit the 1st floor.
Where are you going?
William immediately demanded when he sat down at the table. He looked suspiciously from Lupin to Elizabeth.
Why does this concern you?
William briefly thought of jumping down the table and choking him, but decided he'd probably end up the worse for it.
It's weird. Shops don't even open till 10. You're not going out for breakfast, because we're having breakfast now. Are you going to some lawyer's office with her?
I'm all done with lawyers,
Elizabeth smiled sweetly at him, and this irritated William even more.
The divorce is already finalized.
Imagine that. How'd you get it done so quick?
He demanded, and Rosie gave him a kick under the table.
I haven't a clue,
she replied truthfully.
The papers just came in the mail yesterday. I know you two are going somewhere,
hissed Rosie to Elizabeth.
Tell me where.
Elizabeth looked very embarrassed, but Lupin just set down his paper and regarded Rosie very calmly.
And why do you think that? Because you're all got up in muggle clothes and she's all dressed up.
Does that mean we're going to the same place?
Rosie frowned.
Well, maybe not. But neither of you will say where you're going, so I bet you are.
Quentin was thinking the same thing, but reminded himself it was none of his business. Solange, of course, had no such qualms.
What are you two up to?
She demanded.
Here's the thing,
Lupin remarked conversationally to Quentin.
I don't call you mentioning I was to account for my whereabouts at all times if I moved in here.
Quit getting in his business, snapped Quentin to Solange.
Solange threw down her buttered scone and glared at Lupin, who gave her a smirk.
Oh, and you quit telling me what to do,
she shouted at Quentin.
I'll quit telling you what to do if you'll quit talking about the bloody wedding, he shouted back.
Solange had been too busy picking out table linens for the reception hall the night before for any shagging to occur, and he was quite irritated indeed.
Fine, then. Maybe there won't be any bloody wedding,
shrieked Solange and flew out of the room. Quentin ignored this completely and started looking at the stock exchange.
Dad,
Rosie hissed in a warning tone,
you better go talk to her. She might be really mad and call it off.
She won't, he replied and turned the page. She's too interested in the table linen and the floor arrangements and the color scheme of the fucking dresses and the godforsaken wedding dress to call it off.
He threw down his paper and stomped out of the room, quite in the opposite direction. Rosie and Jamie looked at each other in disgust.
Honestly, why can't they behave?
She snapped. I don't know, Jamie replied gloomily. They're going to mess everything up. They just act like grown-ups.
They need to compromise,
Teddy loudly announced.
That's what you have to do when you're mad at each other. Compromise.
Where did he learn that word? Elizabeth smiled and whispered to Lupin.
Last night, we were arguing because he wanted to go to Hogsmeade with us, and I wanted him to stay there, so I told him we'd compromise and I'd teach him some spells after dinner. He wasn't convinced until I promised him we'd practice them on Kenny.
Well, Elizabeth looked at Teddy and felt rather guilty. She knew he liked spending time with his father.
Maybe he should come with us.
He gave her a very thoughtful look.
Maybe I want it to myself.
Oh, stop. Elizabeth looked down and blushed. I did not mention Teddy again. Jamie was headed for the front door the same time Elizabeth and Lupin were leaving. Kenny, who wanted a ride to school, was in hot pursuit, and Rosie was trying to stalk them from a distance, something Lupin found quite funny indeed.
Really? Can I talk to you at dinner? Jamie pleaded again.
Sure.
Lupin glanced at him and realized they were about the same height.
Jamie, have you a jacket I can borrow?
Yeah, definitely.
Jamie practically pranced over to the closet and began pulling out a few jackets. Lupin and Elizabeth exchanged puzzled glances. He was obviously quite delighted about something.
Can I have a ride, dude?
Kenny whined.
Sure,
Jamie shrugged, and Elizabeth gave him a worried look.
Jamie, are you feeling all right?
Yeah, I feel great. Here, take whatever stuff you want, Lupin. I'm going to Harrod's today and get some new stuff, he announced cheerily and strode off through the front door with Kenny slinking behind him.
What do you think, then?
Lupin knew Elizabeth would enjoy dressing him, and sure enough, she started instructing him to try the jackets on.
We're going to be late,
he smiled at her.
I'll drive faster. That's the one, that long brown corduroy one. That looks really good on you.
Lupin did not want to admit to Elizabeth he'd never been in a Muggle car before. He found the whole nonsense quite silly. Why risk an automobile accident when one could safely apparate? And he was horrified with the whole idea of Teddy riding a school bus. He was irritated when he watched Elizabeth buckle her seatbelt, but didn't seem to be able to do it the same way she did. It was adjusted for Solange and wasn't long enough. Elizabeth started giggling.
Have you ever ridden in a car before?
It's none of your business.
He smiled at her.
You haven't!
Have you ever ridden on a Thestral?
Fine, then,
she smiled at him.
You got to wear your seatbelt. It's not safe if you don't,
she said sternly.
Well, fix it for me.
She leaned over him and pulled the belt out longer. This gave him the perfect opportunity to pull her up against him and kiss her.
Stop that. We're really going to be late,
she said breathlessly, but then kissed him back.
I couldn't resist. Rosie spying on us.
What?
Elizabeth sprang back and looked furiously around the parking lot.
Where is she? That snake. She's as bad as Solange.
You can't see her. She's about 100 yards back, and she's got into her pink Lamborghini. I guess she's going to tail us.
Lupin was laughing.
This is not funny. It's very rude.
Oh, you know how she is. William probably egged her on. You can't stand it that we're going somewhere together.
Elizabeth started smiling.
Well, where should we go that would really shock them, then?
Probably exactly where we're going.
Rosie couldn't decide whether to follow Jamie or Elizabeth, since she wanted to find out both the secrets. But she decided it was highly unlikely Jamie would miss class for anything. She took off after Elizabeth, being quite careful to stay at a safe distance, and began giggling furiously to herself. She really didn't feel like going to the recording studio. Her parents were in bad moods, and William would be gone all day at work. And she hated being bored more than anything. When he whispered to her as he was leaving that he wished she'd follow them and find out what was going on, she needed no further encouragement. There was a loud crack, and Timothy appeared in the seat next to her. Rosie was so startled, she almost ran off the road.
When did you learn to do that?
She shouted. You're supposed to take a test. You're supposed to be 17 or something.
Been doing it for years, he sulked. How do you think I'd get in Quentin's office?
Well, what are you doing here?
William said you were going to spy on Lupin and Elizabeth.
He looked as offended as if she'd left the country forever without telling him goodbye.
How could you go spying and not bring me?
Well, apparently you've brought yourself,
she replied sullenly.
Well, maybe you can help me. See a car up there?
Yeah, replied Timothy interestedly. And Lupin knows you're following them.
Damn, what am I going to do?
Change the color of your car,
Timothy told her calmly, snatched a wand out of his pocket and shouted,
Cambia azul!
And the car became blue.
Where'd you get that wand? You can't do underage magic.
William gave me his. He really wants to know where they're going,
Tim grinned delightedly.
Besides, they can't kick me out of Hogwarts when I'm not there yet. All they'll do is send a note to Mum and she'll just think it's funny.
This is great. Now we can follow them and they'll never know.
Rosie and Timothy exchanged conspiratorial smiles.
Better change the model of the car, though.
2 minutes later, they were in a blue Honda Civic. Rosie had her sunglasses and headscarf on, and Timothy was hiding beneath the dashboard.
What is so funny?
Elizabeth looked over at Lupin, who had burst out laughing again.
Timothy's just apparated into Rosie's car, and he's changed it into a blue Honda Civic. They're two cars back. See? She's wearing those big sunglasses and that scarf. Oh, Elizabeth was furious. Those little brats. Why do you think it's funny? Well, they must be awfully bored. He laughed again. It's also funny that Timothy thinks he can track me down. You know he thinks he's the greatest wizard since Albus Dumbledore, she yelled. He is getting way out of hand. He's about to get into hand, Lupin told her, smiling, and pointed his wand at the Civic. Hacia atrás. What the hell did you do to my car? Shrieked Rosie. It's going backwards! We didn't do anything, shouted Timothy as he waved the wand and yelled out spells, all to no effect. You better slow down, we're going to crash! Rosie slammed on the brakes. Now what are we going to do? She demanded. We're stuck in a car that only goes backwards! See you now. She glanced down at her lap and saw a note unfolded there.
I suppose you'll have to walk then, won't you?
Oh, she was both infuriated and embarrassed. And you better change this car back.
Well,
Timothy looked guilty.
Well, what? I don't know how to change it back. It's a lot harder. I am going to fucking kill you, screeched Rosie. This is my favorite car. Dad gave it to me for Valentine's Day. He's going to be mad as shit.
She flung herself out the door and began stomping along the highway.
Wait for me, wailed Timothy and trotted behind her.
Elizabeth signed herself in nervously at the desk. She was quite comfortable with her physician, Cynthia, whom she'd seen for the last 10 years, but she had no idea what Lupin was going to ask her. Cynthia's going to think I'm crazy, she thought, but she'll have to admit he's awfully cute. Lupin had wandered over to the water fountain. He turned the handle and looked quite startled indeed when water bubbled out.
Will you sit down?
She hissed. Everyone in the waiting room was watching him with interest.
You're lucky I'm not Arthur Weasley, he grinned at her. He'd be trying to take it apart and saying, amazing!
Never seen a water fountain before, old chap,
bellowed a large gentleman with a bowler hat and suspenders who was accompanied by his elderly wife.
He's very rude, his wife snapped. Just ignore him.
The man looked pointedly at Elizabeth's empty ring finger and then at Lupin.
Living in sin, are we?
Apparently he was so deaf he couldn't hear how loud he was, but everyone else in the waiting room certainly could.
I suppose you're here because your wage got knocked up then.
George, be quiet,
screeched his wife. He paid her no attention whatsoever.
No, no, quite the opposite, Lupin told him serenely. We're trying to get her that way.
Elizabeth was extremely glad when they called her name from the doorway. After Elizabeth had argued the nurse out of putting her in a paper gown, much to Lupin's disappointment, she sat on the exam table and watched him warily as he prowled around.
What the hell is this?
He was looking at a tray of metal speculums.
You don't want to know, she replied. Muggle medicine is fucking barbaric. I don't know how you stand it.
The door opened just in time for the physician, who was not Cynthia, to hear Lupin's comment. She was very tall, bony, and horse-faced, with the mouth fused into an angry frown. Lupin hastily went back and sat down on his chair.
Dr. Freeman is out today,
she informed Elizabeth snappishly.
I am Dr. Wyndham. I will be attending you this morning.
Elizabeth gave Lupin a look of apprehension.
The nurses inform me you've refused to put on a gown.
She's very uncooperative, Lupin announced cheerfully. I think they should just all come in and get her in that gown, then.
Stop it, hissed Elizabeth. There's no need for me to wear a gown. I just had an exam last month. I talked to Cynthia about fertility pills, and she said I'd need to come back and get them. That's what I'm here for.
Dr. Wyndham looked so sourly at her that she appeared to have just finished off a bag of lemons. She flipped angrily through Elizabeth's chart and frowned over at Lupin.
And what is your relationship, sir?
I meant to be the father of the baby.
There was no question as to her disapproval.
Well, there are several things to know when one is trying to conceive after 40.
What's that? Elizabeth started looking anxious.
Well, first of all, you must take the pills every day.
Well, that's not a problem I'm not going to forget.
Secondly,
she ignored her and pulled out some sort of monthly calendar out of a drawer.
We have to plan the schedule.
The schedule? Both of them blurted out.
The schedule for the intercourse, she announced loudly enough to be heard in the waiting room. For the best results, one should not have the intercourse any more than 48 hours.
Any more often. How do I rewind this?
Damn it.
Sorry about that. I really need to learn how to rewind this machine, so I'm going to go back and read that line again.
For the best results, one should not have the intercourse any more often than 48 hours.
Why? Demanded Lupin. I should have known he'd asked that, thought Elizabeth to herself.
A potency of the sperm, announced Dr. Wyndham in exclamatory fashion. They have to build up over at least 48 hours. You don't want to waste the sperm.
Elizabeth briefly wished she had had the paper gown so she could put it over her head.
Yeah,
Dr. Wyndham was furiously scribbling on the calendar, marking off every other day with an X.
Now, these are the days for the intercourse.
Lupin snatched up the calendar and started studying it. Elizabeth resisted the temptation to bury her face in her hands.
Well, this day's no good, he said and scratched off an X.
He flipped through to the next month and did the same thing.
And if we miss that day, then the next day gets the X.
What do you mean it's no good?
Full moon, he replied calmly. Can't do it that day.
Why not?
It's against my religion.
Elizabeth gave up and buried her face in her hands.
Fine, then.
Dr. Wyndham grabbed the calendar back and began redoing it with the full moon days left out, occasionally looking up at Lupin as if he were a total lunatic.
Can I just get the pills?
Mumbled Elizabeth and peered out from between her fingers.
Certainly,
she snapped angrily and threw the calendar down. Lupin picked it up and began studying it again.
Is something wrong with it now?
Can you not do it on days that start with the letters S or T? Perhaps the real problem is erectile dysfunction.
Oh, she's done it now, thought Elizabeth. She knew Lupin was unfailingly courteous, until pushed just a bit too far.
I can do it any day I want to do it.
He leapt up from his chair and snarled.
You go out of this room and we'll do it right now.
Remus! Shrieked Elizabeth, and Dr. Wyndham jumped back a few feet. The two of them glared at each other.
In between 48 hours, there can be no funny business, she announced,
apparently deciding it was best to ignore his previous comments.
That wastes the sperm as well.
What are you talking about now? Shouted Lupin.
Calm down, hissed Elizabeth,
who didn't want to leave without her prescription.
You can't be having intercourse with anyone else on the other days. And no masturbation either. That wastes the sperm. You cannot waste the sperm.
Don't you dare, whispered Elizabeth fiercely. Lupin was obviously itching to pull out his wand.
You're the one that wanted to come.
Lupin took a deep breath and told himself to calm down.
There won't be anyone else, he said irritably, and I'll follow your instructions. Now, do you have any other ways to embarrass me?
Well, Dr. Wyndham was undeterred, we do need a sperm sample. The nurse will give you a cup and a magazine, and the nurse will bloody well not. You just told me not to waste them. We'll get the sample today, and you can start with the intercourse the day after tomorrow.
No, there isn't going to be any sample today, and we can start with it tonight.
Dr. Wyndham scribbled out the prescription in silence, her cheeks flaming, flung it at Elizabeth, and stomped out the door. There was a loud crash in the hallway.
My, I think she fell,
Lupin announced calmly.
Can't imagine how that happened. Quite embarrassing for her, I'm sure.
Elizabeth burst out laughing. They could hear Dr. Wyndham shrieking for a nurse to pull her up. Lupin looked at her, smiled, and shook his head.
I think now I understand why these muggle doctors make you cry.
Oh, Cynthia's nothing like that. You love her.
Elizabeth kept laughing. What is wrong with that woman? Did she have to keep hollering about the intercourse?
Did she have to keep yelling about not wasting the sperm? That was pretty funny. Can I tell Quentin?
No!
Rosie tried calling her father to come and get her, but was not in the least bit surprised when her cell phone did not work.
This is all your fault,
she shouted at Timothy as they stomped along the highway.
How's it my fault? I was just following them. You thought you could actually catch him, so he was showing you a thing or two.
Timothy kicked at the pavement.
Next time I will, he muttered.
You are crazy. You think you're a better wizard than he is?
Maybe I am,
shrieked Timothy, and for a moment Rosie had a passing fantasy of shoving him in front of a car.
Look, what the hell's that?
There was some sort of crumpled heap ahead of them in the road, and both hurried forward with interest.
Help me, man!
Kenny was curled up in a ball, moaning.
I'm fucking dying here, dude!
They both burst out laughing.
Whatever are you doing here? You don't even hurt, Kenny,
Rosie giggled.
I am, man. Look at this scratch! Jamie pushed me out of his car, dude.
He did not.
Well, all right, dude. Maybe I kind of fell out of his car, man, but he should have told me the doors weren't locked, and he didn't turn around.
Rosie and Timothy hooted with laughter.
Good for him,
Rosie couldn't resist adding.
You're taking advantage of Oxford anyway.
I am not, dude. I have special needs.
What are you studying anyway?
Timothy blurted out as he and Rosie yanked him to his feet.
Agriculture, dude. I'm learning how to grow things. And I got my scholarship money. After I paid for my classes, I had like 300 pounds left over, man. I'm gonna get tons of hydros with that.
They're paying you to learn how to grow weed,
Rosie yelled.
I'm never giving them any money again. I'm quitting the alumni club.
I have special needs, dude,
shrieked Kenny.
No doubt, Rosie told him sourly. Hey, do you have a cell phone?
Yeah, man, I bought it with some of my scholarship money.
Rosie snatched it up and punched out her father's number.
Hi, Dad? Yeah, me and Tim and Kenny are kind of walking down Holland Park Avenue. Can you come get us?
She held out the phone so the other three could hear the shouting.
Fine then, Dad. Just make us walk. It's like 8 more miles, she shrieked.
Okay, then,
she gave a pitiful sniff.
We're almost to the corner of Labrick Grove.
Well, I don't know why. Timothy wrecked my car and Kenny fell out of Jamie's.
She snapped the phone shut before she could hear any more shouting. Quentin stormed out of his office with his car keys in hand. Bea opened her mouth angrily. It was only 9 o'clock. Took a look at his face and decided she was glad he was leaving.
When shall I say you'll be back?
She asked pleasantly.
Oh, for God's sake, who the fuck knows? This whole fucking house is crazy.
I've been telling you that for years,
she replied calmly. Solange was at the breakfast table eating a bowl of porridge when he came stomping by. She enjoyed dramatic exits from the dining table, but did leave one hungry later. Then she gave him a furious look.
Where are you going?
To pick up your fucking children.
Don't you dare call them that. Whatever are you talking about?
Timothy and Rosie are walking down Holland Park Avenue for some bloody reason. She said Timothy's wrecked her car. Solange jumped up.
Are they okay?
She shrieked. I just said they were walking, didn't I?
You didn't even ask if they were okay?
Quentin stormed out the front door and slammed it behind him.
There isn't going to be any bloody wedding!
She shrieked and threw her bowl of porridge at the door.
Let's get out of here,
burst out Elizabeth as soon as the nurse handed her an appointment slip and some samples of her prescription.
Can't we operate somewhere? I don't even want to see her in the hall.
Sure, Lupin smiled and summoned his traveling cloak. He was quite pleased to put his arms around Elizabeth and shout,
Hogsmeade!
This is the cutest place,
she squealed when they appeared in front of the three broomsticks.
Looks like a croft house.
The cottage exterior had been recently repainted a bright yellow with a pink door and shutters, and the slanted roof was entirely made of thatch. There were several older wizarding couples entering and exiting the building.
Doesn't it? I brought Quentin here once. I knew he'd like it. Rose Murta grew up in the Highlands.
Elizabeth frowned at this. For some reason, she didn't like the way he said her name.
Are they even serving yet?
Breakfast. That's why the older crowd's out.
The cottage was dimly lit with a roaring fireplace and many scattered tables of different sizes and configurations. There were brightly colored booths along the back wall, and a menagerie of birds twittered and tweeted above their heads.
Do you have a preference?
Lupin asked her politely, but he pointed to a triangular-shaped booth beside the fireplace.
That's our usual booth.
This is fine.
Elizabeth was beaming. She had desperately wanted to see more of the wizarding world since she'd read the books.
What's with all the birds?
Oh, God, I hate them,
he shuddered.
Rose Murta's got a thing for birds.
Watch out,
he added as a swallow swooped by her face.
Remus Lupin, are you here for breakfast, then?
Elizabeth knew this had to be Madame Rose Murta, for both her curvaceous figure and sensual air. She could well imagine why Ron Weasley had always been staring at her.
No, we've already eaten, he replied casually. This is my friend Elizabeth. Elizabeth, Rose Murta. We just thought we'd have a snack.
Cherry syrup and soda with ice and an umbrella,
she smiled at him.
Yeah, and a glass of sherry for Elizabeth. She's just come from the muggle doctor's office. Very traumatic.
Rose Murta shuddered and gave Elizabeth a sympathetic look.
I've heard about those muggle doctors. Don't suppose they put needles in you and other things?
Elizabeth giggled.
Yes, I suppose I'm used to it, but this doctor is really bad.
Rose Murta smiled.
I'll be back with your drinks, and I'll tell you some stories.
She grinned at Elizabeth.
Don't believe anything she says. I think she's under the imperious curse again. Lupin told her sternly, but his eyes were twinkling. Rosmerta appeared with the drinks and some sherbet in a pie tin, and Elizabeth felt herself relaxing as she sipped her sherry. She looked at Rosmerta and smiled.
Tell me some stories.
Rosmerta appeared delighted with this and pulled up a chair, and Lupin put his head in his hands and sighed.
Well, when I first met Remus, he's 8 years younger than me, you know, I was working here as a waitress, and he and Sirius and James came in for their first Hogsmeade visit. They were 3rd years. Sirius was very cheeky and started asking me if I wanted to shag him, and James was playing with the snitch and trying to impress me,
and Remus was scared of the birds. Elizabeth laughed out loud.
You fight Death Eaters and you're scared of birds?
I hate them, he announced firmly.
They're creepy. There were like 9 million pigeons in here that day, and they all set on me at once.
He shuddered.
They were trying to peck my eyes out. It was like that Muggle movie, The Birds.
Rosmerta screeched with laughter.
He jumped on the table and started yelling they were going to blind him. Then he waved his wand round to shoo them off and ended up stunning himself. He fell off the table and James and Sirius put bird seed in his hair.
Solange paced about in the great room until Quentin returned with his 3 passengers. Rosie and Timothy were shouting each other, and Kenny was whining about some slight abrasion on his arm, as if the limb had been ripped from his body.
"Here they are," he snapped at her, as if it were all her fault. "Are you okay? What happened?"
She rushed breathlessly up to her children, completely ignoring both Kenny and Quentin.
"Timothy turned my car into a blue Honda Civic!"
What? Shouted Quentin.
I couldn't help it, wailed Timothy. William gave me his wand. He told me to go spy on them.
Spy on who? Shouted Quentin again, who looked as if he'd like to tear him into small pieces.
Elizabeth and Lupin!
Oh, for God's sake, leave him the fuck alone! Rosie suddenly turned on her brother.
Where's William's wand?
She demanded.
You lost his wand?
I think I left it in the car.
Dad, we've got to go back and get my car. They're going to tow it, and William's going to be really mad if his wand gets lost.
Your mother can take you to get your bloody blue Honda Civic. Some of us have to go to work so we can afford the Egyptian cotton table linen.
Fine, then, screeched Solange. Don't even think I'd ever marry you. You're the worst temple person in the whole world.
And you're the most fabric-obsessed woman on the planet. Quentin stormed out, Solange burst into tears, and Kenny cheerfully pulled out a few pills and swallowed them.
Hope you dudes are happy, man,
he told Timothy and Rosie with satisfaction.
You broke them up. It's like all your fault, dudes.
Next door to the 3 Broomsticks was Scrivenshaft's Quill Shop. Elizabeth was fascinated with the store, which made her feel she had been transported back to the 19th century.
Look at all these quills, she whispered delightedly, and all the different kinds of parchment in the ink bottles. It's so old-fashioned. Why, our merchandise is completely up-to-date,
sniffed a haughty wizard in a yellow silk robe and top hat as he strode across the polished hardwood floors. Elizabeth wandered over to the stationery section and began exclaiming over lace-edged linens and envelopes that could be enchanted to sing.
These are so pretty. Look, they have them in different colors. Very popular for new baby announcements,
the proprietor seemed mollified by her comments.
See? The pink linen with the scalloped edges has tiny pink silk ribbons. And here's a spot for a picture.
Perhaps we'll come back and get some in a few months. Lupin smiled at her, and Elizabeth felt a great swelling of something she had long forgotten existed. Hope rising in her chest. This could be so wonderful, she thought to herself. I might actually have a baby, and maybe... No, I won't think about that. They left the store after Lupin bought some parchment and ink for himself, and some of the linen stationery for Elizabeth. Despite her protestations, she'd never dare try to write on it.
Let's go see the goat man, she beamed, and they started off towards the Hogshead. What's his name? The one that's Dumbledore's brother?
Aberforth, and it isn't the cleanest place, Lupin warned her.
You are so right,
whispered Elizabeth as they entered the dark and seedy-appearing Hogshead. The smell of goat and stale beer permeated the air. The grizzled old proprietor, Aberforth, came forward in his dirty leather smock and grinned, showing a few yellow teeth.
Remus, come to see the goats. I've still got some Savannah.
Shut it, Aberforth,
he and Lupin laughed.
Which one's Savannah?
Elizabeth asked, and Aberforth gave her a big smile.
Why, that's the one Remus said he loved. His mates brought him in here one night. Long time ago, mind you. They had
quite too much fire whiskey. Found him lying around in my backyard telling Savannah he loved her and she was the most beautiful goat in the world.
You said Ceres made that up, Elizabeth shrieked delightedly, and Lupin looked quite embarrassed indeed.
Aberforth roared with laughter.
No, he didn't. Heard it with my own ears.
I'm just giving Elizabeth a tour of Hogsmeade,
Lupin told him, ignoring the subject of the goat.
We've already had refreshments.
No, none of that. Have a couple of butter beers on the house.
Lupin looked at Elizabeth, and she shrugged her acquiescence.
Very pretty girl. Pretty girl,
Aberforth exclaimed as he led them to a table. He did not seem at all offended when Lupin pulled out his wand and shouted, Scourgify, to clean the table and chairs before they sat down.
Think I've seen you before?
I don't think so, Elizabeth was puzzled. I'm sure you can tell I'm a muggle.
Picture? You had a picture of her, didn't you, Remus? Long time ago?
Probably.
Lupin downed his butterbeer and looked disconfident.
Sure you did. Got a good memory.
Elizabeth tried to spare Lupin's embarrassment by whispering,
This is so great, meeting all these people I've read about,
when Aberforth wandered away.
Did you meet Harry at the party?
No, he was always surrounded by a crowd. I wanted to, though. I still have that radio that was his mother's. It makes me feel badly. I wanted to give it to him, but not at the party, obviously.
He'd tell you to keep it. Lupin smiled at her. Speaking of Harry, shall we visit his favorite place next, Madame Puddyfoot's?
Elizabeth burst out laughing.
Isn't that the really tacky place where he had that awful date with Cho Chang?
It is.
This is so fun, she squealed.
This is definitely fun,
he agreed. She looked positively radiant. Madame Puddyfoot's was a small, cramped tea shop that appeared to have been decorated by a lovesick old woman. There were frilly pink curtains and frilly pink table linens, pink shag rugs, heart-shaped red lanterns over the tables, pink confetti being tossed about by floating golden cherubs, and the warbling sound of Celestina Warbuck's love songs.
This is where you got the cherubs for the Valentine's Ball,
Elizabeth grinned when they sat down in a red velvet-covered booth.
Yeah, I knew Solange would love this tacky shit,
he replied cheerfully, and she burst out laughing.
She does like tacky shit. Have you seen that bed she ordered?
No, but Quentin told me his bedroom looks like a French bordello now.
Well, it does. Solange would love this place. She'd make him bring her here for lunch.
Well, that would go over quite well, Lupin grinned. I guess we can't keep having a drink at every shop. They have pretty good ice cream.
Strawberry!
Elizabeth clapped her hands when a buxom, merry-faced woman in red robes decorated with tiny pink hearts brought them each two large goblets of ice cream with cherries on top.
Sweets for the sweet!
She trilled and flounced away.
She doesn't seem to know you.
Lupin laughed.
No, this isn't one of my hangouts. Last time I was here was 3 years ago for Harry's 21st birthday. Ron and I blindfolded him and apparated him here. When the waitress showed up, Ron told her he was Harry's partner and they were celebrating their anniversary. Then I brought in Rita Skeeter to take some pictures for the Prophet.
That is horrible!
No, it was fucking classic. Harry said he'd never speak to either of us again, and he went shouting out into the street, stomping around like Quentin.
How'd you get him to forgive you?
I took him to Aberforth and bought him a fire whiskey and a lap dance from a vela. He forgave me pretty quickly because it was 2 days before full moon, and I blamed it on that. He told Ron he didn't have any excuse, though. I think he actually went 3 months without speaking to him.
Don't you have a birthday coming up?
He winced.
Don't remind me. It's always been a thing with us. Well, first James and Sirius and I, and then it kind of spread to Arthur and Bill and Charlie and Ron and Harry and even Neville, to take the birthday boy out and embarrass him as much as possible.
You know, I was wondering...
Good thing I had that cherry and butter beer.
How we're going to work this out?
Her cheeks felt very warm.
Work it out? Well, we are on two different floors, you know, and... Everybody uses the same elevators. I don't want everyone yelling at breakfast about how I was going up to your floor at night.
You know they'll find out eventually, right?
Well, hopefully, but I don't want them to know we're trying. Solange and Rosie will always be asking me if it's happened yet, and...
She didn't want to finish.
And you don't want them feeling sorry for you if it doesn't.
Well, that's fine. We'll tell them when it's a done deal. And since I can't leave Teddy there by himself, why don't you just call me and tell me when I can operate you up?
What time does he go to bed?
9. I think I'll change to 8:30, though. He needs more sleep.
Elizabeth giggled.
But what if he comes in?
Well, he hesitated, I think we're going to have to tell him, just that you might be coming to visit and that he's got to knock from now on, and you'd be horribly embarrassed if you told anyone. He won't want that, and he's very good about keeping his word. You don't think he'll be upset? He's used to having you all to himself. I think he'll start calling you Mum.
They both laughed, but Elizabeth felt a peculiar pang of sentiment. I wouldn't mind that so much, she thought, if there were any truth to it. Lupin put his arm around her in the booth.
You can't come to Madame Puddyfoot's without getting kissed, he told her sternly. It's a rule. I don't remember reading about that.
Jenny didn't know,
he muttered gruffly and bent over and kissed the back of her neck. Elizabeth took in a breath and looked around at the other tables. There was definitely a lot of snogging going on.
Is this place enchanted or something?
She demanded, but it came out more of a whisper. He was trailing kisses up her neck.
A bit. It's the cherries on the ice cream.
He cupped her face and kissed her lips for several minutes before continuing. I don't even care, thought Elizabeth.
It doesn't work if you aren't attracted to the person anyway. It's not like you can trick someone into doing something they don't want to do.
Okay, then,
murmured Elizabeth. She wasn't quite sure if it was the sherry, the butterbeer, the enchantment, or Lupin, but she felt quite sure if he announced there was a rule one had to shag under the table on their first visit, she'd go right along with it. She was sitting in his lap by now, and Lupin found the long side split of her skirt came quite in handy indeed, especially as it was hidden beneath the table. I am losing my fucking mind, he thought, but ran his hand up her thigh and beneath her silk thong anyway.
Oh!
She had one hand around the back of his neck and started letting out soft moans.
Please,
for God's sake, don't say that,
he whispered desperately.
That makes me fucking crazy. I'm not meant to be wasting anything, you know.
Flash, flash. There was an explosion of lights and Elizabeth blinked into the hideously grinning face of Rita Skeeter. Two gnomes with enormous cameras were jumping behind her, snapping photos.
It's exclusive!
Rita sang out cheerfully. She pulled out her acid green quill and notebook and rudely plopped down at their table.
Harry!
Shouted Lupin, and sure enough, Harry came grinning around the corner, his black hair askew. He gave Elizabeth an embarrassed, apologetic look.
Sorry, he muttered to her, but then grinned at Lupin again. Couldn't resist. I was down at the Hogshead buying fire whiskey and I saw you two walking up here. I still haven't forgotten my birthday.
You really shouldn't hold grudges,
Lupin told him mildly.
Well, it's not like anyone I know reads the Daily Prophet,
mused Elizabeth, thanking God for the tablecloth, and Harry, apparently feeling he'd been forgiven, sat down.
Go on, he muttered rudely to Rita. Got your pictures now.
What about that interview you promised me?
Later, after Quidditch practice, he snapped.
Rita and her camera-laden gnome slouched off, and Harry looked about him in horror as if he suddenly realized where he was.
Would you bring her here? This is the worst place in Hogsmeade.
I'm giving her the grand tour.
Lupin replied.
This is Elizabeth, Solange's sister. Remember, the one Quentin proposed to.
Right, Harry brightened. So you haven't been here before?
Well, Elizabeth smiled. Not to Hogsmeade or Diagon Alley, but I've been to Hogwarts. I even met your parents, very briefly.
You did? Harry was quite interested in this.
Yeah, I brought her to Hogwarts when we were 7th years, Lupin told him, and started telling her about Death Eaters who wanted to kill her and, well, everything stupid I could possibly have said.
Pretty much, Elizabeth replied, but smiled at him. Her cheeks were still quite flushed. But I really liked your mum, Harry. She was so nice to me. And we ran into Snape, and he and Remus both whipped out their wands and snarled at each other. It scared me to death.
Harry shouted with laughter.
Ha! You act like all you ever did was keep the peace between Snape and Sirius.
He called him Snivellus and told him to bugger off,
Elizabeth informed Harry cheerfully, and he laughed harder. Lupin tried to give him a sour look, but failed.
Well, he was being an ass, he replied genially.
I can imagine, Harry grinned and jumped up. Look, I'm going to throw up if I have to stay in here 5 more minutes. I'm going to go meet Ron for lunch at Hogwarts. Want to come?
Elizabeth looked askance at Lupin. She already felt she knew Harry. He was, as Lupin had told her, just as Ginny had written him in the books. But she didn't want to be surrounded by a dozen other strangers. Besides, she thought, this is kind of like our day.
No thanks. I don't want Elizabeth to hear any more stories about me.
Nah, he's great, Elizabeth, really.
Harry smiled at her.
Tell everyone I said hello, then, will you?
Lupin asked him.
Sure.
Harry took a final look around the place and made a terrible face before leaving.
"You know this is all going to get back to William," Elizabeth whispered. "Straight from Harry to Ron to Percy to William. He's going to set that rake on me or something."
"Oh, no, he's not," Elizabeth sighed.
"I wish Rosie was going out with Harry," she blurted out. "I mean, sorry, I shouldn't have said that, but I know William doesn't like me, and he really doesn't like to think of me with you."
"He can get over it," replied Lupin disinterestedly. "When he started going out with Rosie, I made a point to be friendly with her. He can do the same for me."
"Is that what we're doing?" thought Elizabeth. "Going out?" Honestly, this was rather bewildering. One minute he acted as if this was just an arrangement between friends, and the next minute he was talking about her as if she were his girlfriend.
"What are you thinking?" he asked her very seriously.
"Oh, I don't know.
She was spared from any further sputtering by loud crashing sounds and screaming outside. Lupin peered out the window and jumped to his feet.
"What is it?"
she shrieked.
"Harry,"
he said, and broke off at a dead run. She was so far behind him that when she caught up to the crowd, she could scarcely see for the scrum of witches and wizards all around her. The tall silk and pointed velvet hats were especially distracting, but she kept on trying to shove her way through.
"Is that Malcriado? They say he's the leader. Vampires, the Death Eaters, too. Harry Potter, he'll show them, that's what. You should be helping the boy out. What are you doing, just standing here watching?"
Elizabeth shuddered horribly when she heard the word vampire. She finally pushed her way through enough people that she could see what looked like dozens of bats falling from the sky. And as they fell, they morphed into very tall, thin, deathly pale, and yellow-fanged vampires in black silk suits with wands.
"Harry, summon your broom!"
she heard Lupin shouting and whirled frantically to the left. He had leapt upon a peddler's cart and was blasting curses at vampires as they fell, while engaging in a duel with the tallest and most frightening-looking of the creatures.
"That's Malcriado, it is! Him that Remus Lupin's fighting!"
an overweight, wheezing wizard in purple silk robes and top hat whispered to her conspiratorially.
"He's a horrible sort! Killed half the good vampires in Transylvania, they say!"
Harry had obviously conjured up a shield charm above his head. The falling vampires were hitting it and bouncing off onto the ground, some apparently injured, others seemingly undeterred.
"Accio broom!"
he shouted, and his firebolt appeared in an instant. He leapt on it and zoomed off into the sky. He began twisting and turning in what seemed an alarmingly dangerous fashion, and finally plummeted at a shocking speed, only to break about 6 inches above the ground. At least a dozen vampires flying after him slammed right into the earth below.
"Good show, Harry!"
yelled Lupin. "You are crazy," thought Elizabeth furiously. He seemed to be enjoying himself immensely. He was leaping and jumping around Malcriado as if he were playing with him. She could tell by the look on the vampire's face he was getting furious and frustrated. Harry whirled around and started a steep ascent. There were at least 6 vampires on his tail, and one enormous one coming straight from the side, which he obviously did not see. The crowd let out a collective shriek, and an elderly witch fainted. Lupin jumped to the ground, and during the split second it took Malcriado to come after him, pointed his wand upwards and shouted,
"Avada Kedavra!"
and the large vampire plunged limply to the ground. The crowd burst into delighted applause, but Elizabeth sank to her knees. Apparently he decided he was done with Malcriado. He gave him a bit of a bow and flung his wand at him. The Confringio curse blasted him into pieces, just as it had the Al-Qaeda members on New Year's Day. The few remaining vampires that were left started looking askance at each other. Harry was picking them off in the sky and Lupin on the ground, and apparently decided it was time to call it a day. They disappeared into the blue sky until they were nothing but tiny black dots that vanished on the horizon. Lupin had walked over to Harry, and they were both laughing. Harry was showing him some dent on his firebolt, and Lupin tapped it with his wand, and Harry looked pleased. Apparently it was now fixed. The crowd began shouting exclamations and milling about them. Rita Skeeter's gnomes were flashing pictures right and left. Elizabeth sat down on the ground. Her legs were shaking.
"Bad luck for them, wasn't it?"
Lupin was grinning at Harry as they walked through the crowd.
"So stupid. Honestly, they don't even scout the place to see who's here."
Harry was laughing and seemed very pleased with himself.
"Ron's going to be so mad he missed out on this."
"Ronsky feint. That was perfect."
Apparently this was a Quidditch move.
"Yeah, I'm glad you thought of the broom."
"They're both crazy," thought Elizabeth. "No wonder they're such good friends."
"Elizabeth!"
Lupin finally appeared alarmed when he saw her sitting on the ground.
"What? Now you're worried?"
she practically shrieked. Lupin and Harry exchanged uncomfortable glances.
"You think that's fun? Fighting with death-eating vampires?"
"Well, yeah,"
Harry replied in an embarrassed tone.
"Once I got on my broom. I didn't see that one from the side, though. I think he would have done me in," he added casually to Lupin.
"Quit talking about this like it's nothing!"
she shrieked and burst into tears. Harry and Lupin looked quite horrified indeed. "Sorry," they both shouted.
"Well, it was kind of just like a Quidditch match," Harry blurted out desperately.
"And I knew they wouldn't get to kill us," Lupin added and pulled her to her feet.
Harry mumbled a few more apologies and then darted away. She could tell he was anxious to go fill Ron in on his adventure.
"I'm doing it again, aren't I?"
he said to her with a serious expression.
"Honestly, Liz, I didn't invite them here."
"I guess I'll forgive you," she thought, "since you called me Liz." When Solange, Rosie, and Timothy returned to the scene of the crime, the blue Honda Civic was still sitting at the roadside, and Timothy was relieved to discover the wand in the front seat. He started shouting spell after spell and succeeded in turning the car into a maroon Grand Prix with gold rim tires and purple fuzzy dice hanging from the windshield.
"That looks like something Kenny would drive," screamed Rosie and snatched the wand out of his hand. "You're making it worse!"
She was relieved when her cell phone rang. At least he didn't kill it for good, and was happy to see it was William. She definitely needed to be comforted after her traumatic morning.
"Timothy's ruined my car," she shouted. "And it's all your fault because you gave him your wand and you know better. My dad's really mad and now he and Mum say they aren't getting married."
She paused so that William could begin apologizing and soothing her.
"So what?" he shouted, and she was so stunned she almost threw the phone on the ground. "I'm in big trouble here. Percy just got an owl from Ron, and he had lunch with Harry, and Harry says Lupin and Elizabeth were at Madame Puttyfoot's snogging like crazy, and then they got into a fight with a bunch of vampires."
"Elizabeth got into a fight with vampires? What?"
shrieked Solange.
"Oh my God!
No, not her. Harry and Lupin. Now Percy's really mad and he's seeing all this shit about Lupin and you know I'm going to say something back and then I'll get fired and I really need this job."
"Wow." Timothy had come up beside her and was shaking his head.
"That's a lot of shouting. I could hear him from the other side of the car."
"Car" was exactly the wrong thing to say.
"Who cares about that?" shrieked Rosie. "My car is ruined."
"I knew Elizabeth would fuck everything up. Why can't she leave him alone?"
"Oh,
Rosie momentarily thought of hurling her phone, but then realized she would have no further way to shout at him.
"Why is it Elizabeth's fault that Percy is a great giant turd?"
There was a thumping sound and then a
"Hello?"
in a familiar nasal tone. Apparently William had either dropped or thrown his phone, and Percy had picked it up in time to hear Rosie call him a great giant turd.
I say, I won't have my employees talking round my back. Give me my phone, you prat!
Rosie heard the sounds of scuffling and began laughing to herself. She turned the phone off and put it back in her pocket with a satisfied expression.
"What's that all about?"
yelled Solange, who was still upset about hearing the words Elizabeth and vampires in a sentence together.
"I guess William's going to have to get another job," Rosie replied loftily, "because he can't control his bad temper."
She grinned wickedly to herself.
"How about Dianelli for lunch?"
Lupin said hopefully, and Elizabeth couldn't help smiling up at him. He was obviously trying to make up to her.
"You really need to go to the Leaky Cauldron, you know. It's a famous place."
"That sounds great,"
she replied truthfully. Lupin wrapped his cloak around her.
"Charing Cross Road at Dianelli."
Elizabeth looked rather askance when they appeared at a tiny and grubby-looking pub, sandwiched between a bookshop and a boarded-up old record store.
"Come inside,"
Lupin smiled at her and opened the door. At first dark and somewhat sordid, it became warmer and more welcoming as they walked on. They passed a few private parlors, a bar, and several large fireplaces, and eventually entered the restaurant proper. It was definitely a step above anything in Hogsmeade. The tables actually matched one another in shape and were covered with exquisite linens in a variety of colors, and a wonderful simmering cider smell filled the air that reminded Elizabeth of the great room on tree trimming day. The walls were mainly windows, which gave a wonderful view of Diagon Alley and its inhabitants below. There was quite a variety of clientele, ranging from wizards in business-looking cloaks with ties to raucous dwarves, a hag eating raw liver at a table with a wild-looking warlock smoking a very long pipe, and quite a few older witches drinking miniature glasses of sherry, apparently out for a day of shopping. They were approached by a tiny gnome in red silk livery.
"Table for two?"
he bowed.
"Live food or cooked?"
"Cooked,"
Lupin replied hastily.
"Well, the sorcerer's salon is full, but we have a table for two in the living dead room."
The gnome informed them happily, but Lupin shook his head furiously.
"How about the charms room?"
he asked with a hint of desperation, and Elizabeth smiled.
"Might be a few minutes. Professor Lupin, is it?"
"Yes, we'll wait."
"Why do people still call you Professor?"
Elizabeth was curious. "Oh, it's a Hogwarts honor, probably to make up for the salary. If you teach a whole year, you get to keep the title forever."
I don't use it with people I know, but it's helpful in restaurants and such. When you're a werewolf, you have to cling to whatever respectability you've got.
He grinned at her.
I would think that you'd have earned quite a bit now that you're an Auror and the leader of the Order of the Phoenix, Elizabeth said angrily.
Oh, it's definitely improved things. I don't hear a lot of name-calling anymore. Every now and then, though.
He looked at her a bit worriedly.
Oh, don't let it bother you. I'm quite used to it.
It won't bother me. I'd have something to say to them.
She's more protective than Rosie, he thought to himself and smiled.
Well, please don't. I don't have a problem with it, but if they say something to you, it would be a different matter. And I don't think you'd like it.
He was frowning, and Elizabeth decided to change the subject.
Maybe if we go to the Living Dead room, we'll meet your old girlfriend, the Banshee, she giggled.
Lupin made a horrible face.
God, it's an awful room. It's all done up like some muggle's idea of a Halloween party. Black drapes, clanging skeletons and ghosts and such. And there's so much wailing from the hags and howling from the ghouls, you can't hear yourselves think.
Can't you get Quentin to take everyone to dinner there one night? Wouldn't it be funny? Kenny would freak out.
Oh, God, he would. Quinn will have to pay for it, though. I'm not buying all those fuckers dinner.
Elizabeth laughed. And you are definitely getting more mischievous. He looked down at her as if she were quite adorable indeed, and Elizabeth was momentarily speechless.
Well,
she said finally,
you said I needed to hang around with the Marauder.
So I did. I'll try to get him to do it. Just don't mention what room. William knows about it.
You could talk Solange into having the rehearsal dinner there. She's been saying she hasn't had any idea where to go.
Lupin got a very wicked smile on his face. They sat down on a long velvet settee, and Lupin's cell phone rang. He glanced at it and shut it off, but Elizabeth burst out laughing.
Where did you get that ringtone?
Well, something Quentin put on it for me. Why?
She was giggling as furiously as Rosie.
It's the tune to a song called Werewolves of London.
Rehearsal dinner is definitely going to be in the Living Dead room now, he smiled. You know Solange can be talked into anything.
Quentin looked at his watch and saw that it was 10 o'clock. He knew Parks would be doing laundry and pretending not to watch his favorite soap opera.
Good heavens, he sniffed when Quentin barged rudely through his doorway and flung himself down on the couch. I'm trying to do your ironing hair.
You're watching Passion's Unending Pleasure, snapped Quentin rudely. Don't tell me you're not. You've been watching it since I was 4 years old.
Who invited you in? Demanded Parks haughtily.
Myself. I own this house.
Do you now? Who would have known it, given your humble demeanor?
Quentin thought to himself that no one could sound quite as sarcastic as Parks.
And I suppose that gives you free rein to my private quarters.
Solange says she's calling off the wedding,
he announced abruptly. This had the desired effect of causing Parks to turn off the television set.
What have you done now? He demanded sternly.
I haven't done anything. It's her. She's interested in this. All she's interested in is this bloody wedding. I don't think she even gives a damn who she's marrying.
Parks sniffed.
Women do go on about weddings, he finally said.
Well, what am I going to do with her?
Nothing. In my day, one just didn't call things off because there was some sort of a tiff.
He gave him a very disapproving look.
Oh, you're too bloody old to understand what I'm talking about, barked out Quentin.
Oh, am I? Parks was thoroughly annoyed now. Perhaps she doesn't want to marry you because you can be a complete arse.
Who gives a damn what you think? Shouted Quentin and jumped to his feet.
Well, I believe it was you that came in and interrupted my work.
Work? Work?
Quentin gestured wildly towards the television set.
And if I'm too old to speak with, go and talk to your bloody wizard friend.
Who the fuck knows where he is?
Quentin slammed the door behind him as he left Parks, quite pleased that he was gone, turned the television set back on.
This is the best food ever, Elizabeth sighed ecstatically.
She had finished her pan-fried foie gras and Lupin his steamed au jus pigeon with pomme sirtelez, and they were perusing the dessert menu when she looked up at him worriedly.
Isn't this awfully expensive?
She whispered.
It is,
he whispered back.
Shh, don't let anyone know.
She burst out laughing.
Well, I know you haven't a lot of money.
He smiled at her.
Liz, you're still thinking of Prisoner of Azkaban times. The Ministry pays Aurors extremely well, and I have a financial advisor who's done some excellent investments for me in the last 10 years.
Who? Oh, red velvet pudding. I want that.
Get some, it's quite good. Who do you think, your former and future brother-in-law, of whom you're so fond?
Quentin? How can he invest wizard money?
exchanged it Gringotts for muggle money, of course, and then put it back in when he's made a killing off of it. He smiled at her. He set it up with Bill Weasley.
What do you like for dessert?
He looked a bit sheepish.
What? Tell me!
She demanded.
Well, I like the blood orange dream skulls, but they're meant to be for children. When I bring Teddy here, I make him order two.
Who cares what they think? Oh, maybe I'll have this blueberry mascarpone cake.
She closed the menu and looked satisfied.
Anyway, I'm glad you don't have to worry about money. Quentin likes to remind me that I'm the poor relation.
What?
Lupin was horrified.
He does, she sniffed. Because Dad's estate is entailed, it goes to Jamie, as if he needs any money. So Quentin told me I'd better work on my winsome personality because I was just the poor relation.
The fuck is he to tell someone to work on their personality?
Lupin was outraged.
Well,
Elizabeth began to feel a bit guilty.
I don't really think he means it. I think he'll end up telling Jamie to give that estate to my sisters and me. He just wants me to worry about it.
Well, you needn't worry about it, Lupin shouted, because I have enough money for all of us. So tell him to take that estate and shove it up his...
Remus, stop!
Elizabeth tried to look stern, but was pleased nonetheless.
What do you mean by all of us?
Well, you and me and Teddy and the baby.
There was a long silence. What is he saying, thought Elizabeth furiously, that he wants us to be a family or that I can depend on his child support money? She was glad when the dessert elf chose that moment to stop by with a platter of samples.
I have to stop at the apothecary, Lupin told Elizabeth when they left the restaurant, but you don't have to come in there. It's a horrible smell.
I want to see it. What do you have to get?
Stuff of the Wolfsbane potion.
He looked embarrassed at this, and Elizabeth wished she hadn't mentioned it.
Oh, I thought William did that.
Well, he does, but I'm not letting him pay for the ingredients. Some of them are quite expensive.
Actually, though,
he looked thoughtful. There's no witch that gives out advice at the end of the counter on remedies for this and that. She might have some kind of herbal fertility potion.
Do you think it's safe?
I don't think muggle medicine is safe,
he replied. When Elizabeth entered the door, she was assailed with the smell of bad eggs and rotten cabbage. There were barrels of slimy stuff lined up on the floor, and jars of all sorts of powders and herbs along the walls, and bundles of feathers, fangs, and claws hung from the ceiling. She recognized the witch in question, who wore bright red silk robes and a crookedly pointed hat, and was surrounded by a bevy of old women, all who seemed to be quarreling. They parted as she approached and gave her curious glances.
"Hello," said Elizabeth brightly. I wondered if I might ask an opinion.
Well, yes, dearie.
Anything.
Sorry. I forgot there were more than two old women there.
Why, yes, dearie. Anything at all. Anything at all. I'm looking for something to help with having a baby,
she whispered. Several of the witches clucked sympathetically, and the one behind the counter nodded knowingly.
I've just the thing.
She pulled out a large jar of what looked and smelled like mustard mixed with urine.
Guaranteed to work within 3 months or your money back.
She appeared to take Elizabeth's acquiescence for granted.
Only 10 galleons, 2 thimblefuls a day. I'll take it up to the counter.
Lupin was striding around the store collecting different items and looking displeased. Elizabeth had the feeling this was the last place he ever wanted to come.
Remus, there's a jar up at the counter. It rather looks like mustard.
Good Lord.
He was appropriately horrified.
Is that what you're going to drink, then?
Well, it won't hurt me, will it?
Well, no, the ministry regulates this shop, and actually the worst-tasting potions are usually the most effective.
When they left the apothecary and walked past the cauldron shop, Lupin stopped and frowned.
What? You don't like cauldrons? I don't like them sending me a bill for that cauldron Kenny put on his bloody head.
How can they make you pay for something Kenny broke?
Well, they're blaming it on Teddy.
Well, how dare they blame Teddy?
She stomped into the store and Lupin followed her. She had the distinct impression that he was amused.
Now,
Elizabeth announced loudly to the proprietor, who looked quite startled indeed at the sight of this mouthy muggle woman.
There will not be any more nonsense about sending Professor Lupin a bill for the cauldron that his son did not break.
No, no, certainly not.
The man hastily shook his head.
I'll give you the name of the person who broke it, and you can send him the bill.
She scribbled Kenny's name and address down on a piece of paper and flung it across the desk.
You'll have to tell him the amount in muggle money.
He might mention something about a dick curse if he doesn't pay up,
Lupin added helpfully.
That'll probably get you reimbursed.
Oh, certainly. Oh, certainly very appreciative. If you're ever in need of a cauldron.
There was no need for him to add this, as Lupin and Elizabeth had already left the store.
Excellent, he grinned at her. Perhaps I'll have you come fight some Death Eaters with me then.
Perhaps not. I just know how to deal with nasty shopkeepers, that's all.
They stood outside and Elizabeth gaped at the enormous crooked facade of Gringotts Bank.
Wow, she said. It's actually real.
He burst out laughing.
Come in and you can meet some real goblins.
Elizabeth felt a bit nervous about this. Those goblins sounded awfully creepy in the books, and was pleased when he took her hand and they walked in together.
Flourish and blot! Shrieked Elizabeth and clapped her hands when they exited out a side door of Gringotts. It looks just like in the movies!
Sure it does. It's not as if Ginny's never been here.
She hurried inside and stopped for a moment to soak up the ambiance. There were indeed literally thousands of books, all teetering in perilously tall and crooked piles.
How in the world do you know where to look?
One just does. Lupin smiled at her. Cranwell will tell me if he's got anything new anyway, or anything he's trying to get rid of.
Remus! Got a new dragon book for Teddy!
They stopped at Weasley's Wizarding Wheezes, only long enough for Lupin to chat with George and buy a few items for Timothy and Teddy. It was nearly 4 o'clock, and Elizabeth was anxious to get to the magical menagerie. The store was very crowded, and the noise of the animals was deafening. All four walls and the ceiling were covered with cages, everything from enormous purple toads, poisonous orange snails, gigantic jewel-shelled tortoises, and sleek black rats to the promised cats of many colors. Elizabeth was quite taken with the shimmering red one, until Lupin whispered that red cats were notoriously bad-tempered. She was fascinated but rather frightened by a neon green one with glowing purple eyes, and delighted when she saw a large, friendly midnight blue cat rubbing itself up against the bars of its cage and purring.
"There it is!" she shouted in his ear so he could hear her above the crowd. "That's the one I want!"
When they left the store, they were stopped in the street, and Lupin looked at the amount of packages they were carrying. Elizabeth's bag of samples from the doctor's office, 2 bags of books from Flourish and Blotts, her dreadful potion, the Wizarding Wheeze items, his Wolfsbane ingredients, the parchment, ink, and stationery, 2 blood-orange dreamsicles in a takeout bag, and enchanted not to melt, and the enormous crate that held the cat.
"I think I'm going to have to apparate this stuff on ahead of us," he mused.
"They'll all stop getting into it, the sneaks!"
Elizabeth hastily stuffed her pill samples into her purse.
"Well, nothing much to interest them. Besides, it's 6 o'clock. We're already late for dinner. I'm sure His Majesty will have something to shout about that."
"Where's your mum?" demanded Quentin when Rosie flung herself down on her old seat next to him. She definitely didn't want to talk to William.
"I don't know. You better go find out,"
she told him threateningly.
"The hell should I find out?"
"Because it's always the guy's fault,"
Rosie told him unrepentantly.
"It's not my fucking fault," he shouted,
and Rosie just shrugged. Jamie sat himself across from his sister. He was still grinning cheerily.
"I guess Kenny made it back alive," he commented.
"Yeah, thanks a lot for leaving him on the highway. Timothy and I had to walk back with him."
"What were you doing on the highway?"
"My car broke down,"
Rosie replied defiantly. She did not want to admit she'd been spying with their 10-year-old brother. There was a loud bang and an array of packages in a crate with a very interesting-looking cat suddenly appeared at the foot of the table. Nearly everyone jumped from their seats with alarm.
"What the hell is that?"
yelled Quentin. William was the only one who hadn't moved from his seat. Rosie thought he looked as sulky as Jamie generally did.
"It's shit from Hogsmeade and Diagon Alley," he snapped disgustedly. "Apparently they'd been shopping and he had to send it on ahead."
"What is it?"
Rosie hurried down to the end of the table so she could start investigating the bags.
"Cool! Check out this stationery! Ooh, look how pretty this cat is! I want this popsicle thing! It looks really good!"
"That's a blood-orange dreamsicle," William scowled. "You better not eat it. That's Lupin's favorite dessert and he'd kill you. It's from the Leaky Cauldron."
"You never take me anywhere," Rosie wailed. "I want to go to Diagon Alley in Hogsmeade."
"Well, I can't afford to take you anywhere because I've lost my bloody job thanks to your stupid aunt."
Even Quentin looked puzzled at this.
"How in hell is Elizabeth's fault that you can't keep a damn job your uncle got for you?"
"But this is," William yelled. "You don't think I'm good enough for your daughter?"
"Can't keep a bloody job for 3 weeks, can you?"
William stormed out of the room, fortunately moments before Elizabeth and Lupin apparated into it.
"What's going on?" Lupin greeted them cheerfully. "See the cat, Rosie?" Yeah, the cat's great. William got fired from his job because he started fighting with Percy because he was shouting about you, because you were snogging Elizabeth at Madame Puddyfoot's, and Harry told Ron, and now my dad thinks William's not good enough for me.
She announced this with enthusiasm and sat herself back down to eat. Rosie was quite used to drama.
Oh, Percy will call him back.
Lupin appeared unimpressed by her long recitation. So you were shopping? Well, the secrecy about that? Quentin snapped angrily.
Perhaps we didn't want anyone spying on us,
Lupin replied politely and glanced over at Rosie. She looked embarrassed, but only for a moment.
Hey, can you fix my car?
Sure.
Lupin shrugged and pointed his wand out the front door.
Reparo.
That's it. It's back to the way it was.
You can certainly go check if you'd like.
Timothy glared at him mutinously.
I tried that spell too.
Did you?
Lupin replied in his courteous tone.
Was it work for you and not me?
I've been at it a bit longer,
Lupin replied politely and picked up his coffee. Timothy jumped up on his chair.
I'm going to learn a hex to put on you,
he shouted threateningly, and everyone at the table except Quentin and Lupin laughed.
I find that quite frightening indeed, Tim, replied Lupin mildly. Do you think the cat's hungry?
He asked Elizabeth.
Cat! Cat, you bought a godforsaken cat! Shouted Quentin. For God's sake, the last thing we need in this place is more cats!
Elizabeth wanted it,
Lupin told him calmly, as if that quite settled the matter. Quentin gave him a thoroughly disgusted look.
When we get to practice spells on Kenny?
Teddy shouted happily.
We have to get through dinner first.
A little more of a snap to it. Elizabeth and Rosie were outside in the twilight on a wicker lounge chair, laughing to each other as Teddy tried to disarm Kenny, who was holding a rubber chicken threateningly in his hand. It was difficult to tell who of the two was having more fun, and Lupin kept trying not to laugh as he gave Teddy instructions.
Expelliarmus!
Shouted Teddy and snapped his father's wand. The rubber chicken flew out of Kenny's hand and smacked him in the face. Kenny began howling.
Show, Teddy, you've got it out of his hands. Try and... Oh, for God's sake... Oh, for God's sake, shut up, Kenny. You're not even hurt. It's a rubber chicken.
I am fucking dying here, dude.
Kenny started rolling around on the grass.
That rubber stings, man. I can't take pain, dude.
Can we practice putting curses on him, Dad?
Shouted Teddy.
I think I might get in trouble for that. But he did agree to let us practice spells with him. So here's something that might be useful,
he muttered in Teddy's ear.
Silencio!
Shouted Teddy and waved the wand wildly at Kenny.
If you wave it like that, you're going to get the counter effect.
Lupin's warning was cut off as Kenny's voice, magnified as if by the world's largest megaphone, resonated so loudly it shook the house.
Listen to how loud I am, dudes!
He shrieked with delight. The sound was deafening. Elizabeth and Rosie put their hands over their ears and shrieked,
Make him stop!
Silencio!
Lupin roared, and Kenny was horrified when his voice shut off completely.
Try Wingardio Leviosa,
Lupin handed Teddy back the wand.
Wingardio Leviosa!
Kenny immediately rose about 10 feet in the air and hovered there, his face contorted with fury. Quentin opened the sliding glass door and stomped out.
What the fuck is that god-awful noise?
He stopped when he saw Kenny stretched out in the air above him, as if skewered on a spit, silently shrieking all manner of curses. He sat down in a deck chair and burst out laughing.
I did it, Uncle Quentin!
Teddy was dancing around with delight.
I did it all by myself!
That's great, Teddy.
He looked up at Lupin.
Damn, you two are entertaining.
He glanced over at Rosie and Elizabeth, who were hanging on each other's shoulders and screeching with laughter. Lupin took out his watch.
Yeah, time for bed, Teddy.
But Dad!
Lupin, however, dragged Teddy in the door and they disappeared.
Oh my God! He forgot about Kenny!
Rosie squealed delightedly. Kenny, who was obviously mouthing, I'm gonna kill you dudes, was still rotating slowly counterclockwise in the sky.
What's he in such a hurry for? Quentin grinned. I figured he'd want to sit out here and tell me for 2 hours worth of stories.
How are we going to get him down?
Rosie burst out.
Well, we can't. Maybe we could get William,
Elizabeth chortled.
Yeah, but he's really mad. He probably won't.
Rosie went happily off into the house. Kenny started kicking, which only made Elizabeth and Quentin, who were standing beneath him for the best possible view, laugh harder.
So, he looked down and grinned at her. How was the shopping trip?
Elizabeth was quite amazed by this show of friendliness and smiled, which rather astonished Quentin himself. He always thought Elizabeth was attractive, but she looked positively gorgeous with her glowing cheeks and windblown hair.
Oh, the shopping. Well, it was great.
I'm a bit jealous, you know, he told her sternly. The only place he's ever taken me is the Three Broomsticks.
Is it cute? Does it look like a Croft house?
That it does.
And we have the best food at the Leaky Cauldron. Remus is going to ask Solange if she wants to have the rehearsal dinner there.
Well, thank God, she'll love that idea.
Elizabeth gave him an impish grin he had not ever seen before, and he wondered what else they'd been up to. You're an idiot, he thought to himself. You keep looking for someone to give you advice about Solange, and you ignore the person who knows her best.
Solange is pretty pissed off at me, he said conversationally. But I honestly think all she cares about is this bloody wedding. Kenny could be up there in a tuxedo, and I don't think it would matter.
Now, that's not true, Elizabeth told him sternly. Why do you think it's so important to her that everything be just right? It's because this is what she's wanted since she was 19 years old.
He looked at her thoughtfully and started smiling.
Thanks.
Don't mention it.
They walked back in the house, much to the dismay of the still slowly rotating, floating Kenny.
Elizabeth.
Quentin looked desperately uncomfortable, and Elizabeth knew he felt he should say something nice to her, but really didn't want to.
Don't worry about it, she said kindly. You know I like to give advice, Quentin. And I know Solange.
She went off into the elevator. Quentin decided he'd better knock at Solange's door. He knew something was definitely going to be thrown at him.
Come in,
she said in a very small voice. She was curled up under the covers amidst a pile of Kleenexes and a shredded-up wedding planner. Quentin felt rather like he had when Arthur Weasley had shot him in the heart. He came over and knelt on the floor beside the bed. I should have asked Elizabeth what to say, he thought.
I'm sorry,
wailed Solange. Apparently his expression was enough.
I know I've been going on and on about the wedding and everyone is tired of it.
Too bad for them, Quentin smiled up at her. This is our wedding and you're having fun planning it.
You think I've been going on about it too much, too?
Well, yeah, I suppose I started thinking the wedding was more important to you than the groom. He gave her his wry grin. I actually think it's pretty cute when you get excited about the stuff.
I don't care about the wedding,
she wailed, obviously horrified by what he'd said.
We can go see Peter tomorrow and just elope.
This was a very tempting thought indeed, but he remembered what Elizabeth had said.
Why not have a wedding? We need something to liven this place up. It's deadly dull around here.
He gave her his wicked grin.
This place is about as dull as a three-ring circus,
Solange smiled at him.
What have you been doing?
Talking to your sister, believe it or not.
Loretta?
God, no, the sane one.
Elizabeth?
Yes, we didn't even shout at each other.
Solange was quite puzzled by this.
I think she's happy, she said finally. I hope she and Lupin can keep this assignment, or whatever they're calling it.
Quentin laughed. Does make for some interesting speculation.
Oh, I look terrible.
Solange sat up and started frowning.
Oh, you'll be looking beautiful, as you always do, he told her with his intense look.
She threw her arms around him and kissed him, and Quentin thought that perhaps Elizabeth was just a bit more tolerable than previously imagined. Jamie was staring at Lupin's snowy white owl in dismay. Finally, he sighed and started scratching on a piece of parchment paper.
Ginny, thanks for your note. I didn't clue how to answer it, so I'm using Lupin's owl. Talking to you is definitely the best part of the Valentine's Ball, and you needn't apologize. Nobody has a worse temper than me. Let me know if you want a cell phone, and I'll send you one somehow. Then I can call you, which would be great. Jamie.
He tied it on the owl's leg, opened the window, and watched her fly off into the darkness. Elizabeth was quite shocked to find herself in front of Lupin's bed, apparently in the middle of the Forbidden Forest.
Where are we?
She blurted out, and he laughed.
In my room. This is what I do with it at night. Do you want me to change it back?
There was a slight... Why did he sound like Quentin? Sorry. I need to figure out how to rewind this. I promised to do it before the next story.
In my room. This is what I do with it at night. Do you want me to change it back?
There was a slight warm breeze blowing through the tall pine trees, and the wonderful scent of fir, forest, and fresh air.
No, as long as there aren't any giant spiders.
Now that she was here, she felt quite nervous indeed. She had tried on 15 different outfits before choosing a red silk baby doll nightgown with a plunging neckline that floated about mid-thigh level. She definitely wanted a dressing gown, but didn't want to look like a Christmas tree, and had forgotten her emerald green silk for long black velvet. He pulled her down on the bed beside him and looked at her very seriously.
There aren't any spiders, centaurs, giants, or werewolves. Well, except me. Why are you all wrapped up in that black thing? Oh, I guess I'm a bit nervous, she stammered. I suppose it's silly. It's just that, you know, I suggested all this. It isn't like it was your idea. It's my idea now. I couldn't think of anything else if Voldemort showed up and sat down on that ottoman. You're very bad for my concentration. He gave her a stern look.
Well, she felt a bit reassured and stretched herself out on the bed. I was wondering how Rita Skeeter could sneak up on you and you didn't even notice.
Yeah, that was more embarrassing to me than the pictures. With her perfume, a muggle can tell she's coming a kilometer away.
He shook his head and then smiled at her.
Can I untie this thing?
Sure, she mumbled. Will you stop blushing? She told herself furiously. She found she needn't have worried. The look in his eyes when he saw what was underneath the robe made her forget all about being embarrassed.
Oh,
she reached up to kiss him rather desperately.
Oh, please. Is that the sun coming up?
Elizabeth peered out from behind the drapes. The forest was gone as well.
I guess it is. I think we've ruined this schedule,
he whispered, and she laughed.
Well, it was still a great day, even with that visit. It was definitely a great day, he agreed. Actually, an amazing, incredible, very good day.
He sounded a bit surprised.
I'd better go back town so I can get ready for breakfast.
Despite his proclamation, she gave him a very smoldering look indeed, and he leaned over and kissed her.
Not if you're going to look at me like that.
The door banged open, and Teddy raced in at the speed of light. He leapt up on the bed and started jumping up and down.
Oh, Elizabeth!
He yelled out happily.
Will you help me pick out my muggle clothes for school?
Well, that's one way to ruin the mood, thought Lupin sulkily.
Elizabeth has to go back to her floor and get dressed, Teddy. And remember what we talked about.
Sure, I remember!
He bounced off cheerily, and Lupin waved his wand so Elizabeth would disappear before he changed his mind.
Did you kill my brother?
Henry asked Lupin hopefully an hour later, when Teddy pulled him onto the elevator. He had on his Gryffindor bathrobe, and his hair looked rather like when he'd showed up at the table dead drunk.
Who? Oh, Kenny, he smiled. I think I left him outside, floating around in the air.
I tried to tell you, Dad!
Teddy stomped his foot impatiently.
I told him he was still up there, and you just threw me in the bed!
I didn't throw you,
mumbled Lupin. They stopped at floor 14, and Victor, who looked completely unimpressed with life in general, came slinking in. William and Rosie trotted in on the 13th floor.
Percy called me, William announced immediately. Told him I wasn't coming back, and he gave me a raise.
Rosie beamed at him, but William just gave her an irritated look.
Told you he would.
The hell's up with you? You been drinking again?
No, I'm just sleepy.
Rosie smiled at this, but William started eyeing him suspiciously. They stopped at the 10th floor and Jamie darted in. He was grinning from ear to ear.
It worked,
he whispered conspiratorially to Lupin.
After about 10 minutes, she sent it back with a note. I've got him in the cage.
What are you talking about?
Rosie demanded.
He must have bought his owl to write someone, William told her with a frown. And I bet I know who.
I don't care if you know, Jamie announced cheerfully. But just then the floor stopped at 9, and Shala and the quadruplets got on. This effectively put an end to the conversation.
They passed by the 8th floor and kept on going.
Where's Elizabeth?
Demanded Rosie.
We don't know,
Teddy announced very loudly.
We haven't any idea, do we, Dad? We don't know anything.
I guess she's getting ready for breakfast,
muttered Lupin. They stopped at the 5th floor, and when it opened, Loretta was dressed in one of her frightening pea-green hoop skirts and holding a crowbar.
Stupefy,
Lupin announced when she hurled it at him, and she toppled over.
Can you keep her like that for a while?
Henry was interested.
It'd be great to have a break from all that damn whining.
A few weeks, Lupin replied, and everyone brightened considerably at this. Richard and Lady Fanshawe swept in with their usual dramatic flair. Richard smiled happily at everyone, and Lady Fanshawe immediately began fussing over Lupin.
Remus, you look very tired. Aren't you sleeping well?
I haven't slept at all,
he replied cheerfully.
I'm fine, Caroline. Thank you.
Well, one needs to get one's sleep.
Lupin was horrified when she started fussing with his hair, and backed up until he tripped over one of the quadruplets, and they fell down like bowling pins.
"Honestly, Grandmother, quit messing with his hair. You're so disgusting!"
Rosie screeched, and Henry started laughing.
"I say, Caroline, I say, Rosie is quite right!"
Richard boomed out and glared at her menacingly. The door stopped on the first floor, and Lady Fanshawe, apparently quite unrepentant, swished her way out of the elevator with her vultured hat held high. Quentin, Solange, and Timothy, who had a private elevator from the third floor, were already sitting at the table. Solange was gazing at Quentin with a moonstruck look on her face. Timothy was scowling at both of them and setting fire to everyone's napkins one by one.
"Timothy, stop that shit!"
shouted Quentin, and the servants hastened to remove the blackened linen from the table and replace it.
"Nobody pays any attention to me!"
yelled Timothy as he jumped up on his chair.
"I could just drop dead on this chair and no one would ever notice!" "That is not true," Solange told him sternly, without taking her eyes off Quentin.
"Would you just grow up?" snapped Jamie and sat down.
"Why don't you shut up?" yelled Timothy. "I'll turn you into a great big worm." "Shut up, you arrogant little buck!"
screeched Rosie. She'd had quite enough of Timothy herself.
"Timothy, please sit down," said Lupin kindly.
It was becoming rather apparent what the problem was. Timothy gave him a horrible glare, but sat himself down in his chair and began kicking the table legs. Lupin closed his eyes. He rather felt like putting his head down on the table until he caught the scent of Elizabeth and looked back up. A few minutes later, she came in the room in her jeans and a tight green scoop-neck sweater. Unlike Lupin, she had combed her hair and put on her makeup and looked quite pretty indeed.
"Oh my God, this is going to make me totally sick,"
William muttered to Rosie. Lupin had immediately dragged his chair right next to Elizabeth's and started whispering in her ear. She ducked her head and giggled. Her cheeks were pink. Lady Fanshawe leapt up and threw her buttered biscuit at Elizabeth, and everyone was amazed when Elizabeth just laughed and hurled it right back at her.
"Oh, Elizabeth!" Teddy yelled happily, his hair a vivid pink. "Will you take me to the bus stop? Please, please!"
"Of course," Elizabeth smiled at him.
"If your dad doesn't mind." "I don't want him to take me. Everyone else has their moms there except me. And Dad's so embarrassing. He always starts telling a bus driver the bus isn't safe and who invented this shit."
"It isn't safe," Lupin looked offended. "Do you even have those seat belts?"
"No,"
Teddy sulked, and Lupin turned to Elizabeth immediately.
"You said it was safe to ride in a vehicle without a seat belt."
"Oh, sorry.
You said it wasn't safe to ride in a vehicle without a seat belt."
"Well, that's true. They should have seatbelts on those buses."
"I'll drive him in my car," she answered determinedly.
"I'll drive him in my car," shouted William, who'd been watching this little exchange with great dismay.
"No, you won't. You have to go to work. Now leave them alone,"
Rosie told him threateningly, and he glared back at her.
"So, she's your girlfriend now?"
Timothy asked Lupin with interest. He could always be counted upon to blurt out what everyone else was too polite to ask.
"No, nothing like that,"
Lupin replied very casually and flipped open his profit. Elizabeth felt his feet slapped her, and she was mortified when William gave her an extremely evil and triumphant look.
"Are you ready to go, Teddy?"
she asked when breakfast was over, and felt even worse when she heard her voice shaking.
"Sure!"
Teddy looked at her worriedly and stood up from his chair.
"We're going now, Dad,"
he announced loudly.
"Me and Elizabeth are going."
"Right. Thanks,"
mumbled Lupin to Elizabeth with his eyes half closed.
"Have a good day, Teddy."
Teddy looked at him, shook his head impatiently, and stomped his foot. Quentin smiled at him.
"Don't worry about it, Teddy," he told him cheerfully. "He hasn't a clue. Nothing you can do about it."
"He needs to get one!"
shrieked Teddy, and his hair turned a very ugly brown.
"What are you talking about?"
Quentin snapped at him irritably and glanced up the table at Quentin.
"What the hell are you on about now?"
"What a bloody idiot you are,"
Quentin replied pleasantly. And Lupin, who was too tired to care what sort of nonsense Quentin was yapping about, just got up and staggered back to bed. When he awoke from a dead sleep, it was after 2. He looked at the empty half of the bed and snatched up his cell phone with a frown.
"Why didn't you come back here?"
he demanded when Elizabeth answered in a sleepy voice after several rings.
"Why would I?" she snapped back. "After all, I'm not your girlfriend or anything like that."
"Well..."
he did not deny this, but became very quiet.
"I rather wish you would."
"All right!"
Elizabeth snapped her phone shut. "I am the stupidest person that ever lived," she thought.
"We are really ruining the schedule,"
Elizabeth told him a couple hours later.
"What does she know? Take your potion,"
Lupin told her sternly.
Maybe we can at least go 24 hours. I'll just stay downstairs tonight.
Lupin appeared horrified with the suggestion.
Don't do that,
he said pleadingly.
Well, at least come up and sleep with me. You sleep with me all cuddled up to you so I can't hardly breathe.
Elizabeth still hadn't forgotten his breakfast comment. Lupin sighed and looked very forlorn indeed.
All right, then.
When dinner was over, Solange immediately demanded Elizabeth come and look at her wedding planner. She wanted her opinion on the swatches of fabric for the flower girls, Natalie and Elizabeth. They sat on the couch and she spread the book across her lap. Elizabeth did not look up when Quentin and Lupin wandered over, and Quentin started in on Lupin to play him a game of chess.
We always play chess, Lupin replied. Can't we ever do anything else?
Perhaps we fall into a rut, Quentin answered very seriously. What shall we do then to spice things up?
Lupin shook his head in disgust.
You know, though, he added thoughtfully, I could teach how to ride a broom. It's the broom that's magic, not the person who rides it. If you can ride a horse, there's no reason you can't.
No! Shouted Solange at the top of her voice.
It's safer than that bloody beastie gallops round on, Lupin kept on determinedly. It's not going to throw you off. You're not going to hit a bad patch in the ground because you're up in the air.
How high do you fly?
Quentin was obviously quite taken with this idea.
I said no,
shrieked Solange and jumped up from the couch.
You best drop it,
hissed Elizabeth to Lupin with the warning look.
Well, Harry got a new firebolt and he gave me his old one. I've been wanting to try it out.
Go try it out by yourself, then, shouted Solange.
Yeah, better not, Quentin said much too pleasantly, and Lupin immediately knew he was thinking they would do this behind her back.
Solange and Elizabeth went back to the wedding planner. Quentin picked up one of his boring business journals, and Lupin got up and started pacing around the room.
Stop that pacing, Remus,
Solange snapped. She was obviously still aggravated about the whole broomstick riding business.
What are you worked up about anyway?
I guess I've got something on my mind,
said Lupin seriously and stared very intently at Elizabeth.
That's making me rather crazy.
You're already crazy,
Solange replied tearfully. It was impossible to stay upset with Lupin for long.
I like the pale yellow,
Elizabeth told her sister firmly and stood up.
What? You haven't looked at them all. I have a lot more swatches here.
Quentin and Elizabeth exchanged exasperated glances.
Well, good for you, she replied rudely. I'm going to go read. You are wearing me out. You made me try on 45 dresses after dinner.
45? Quentin and Lupin both looked horrified.
45! And she still doesn't know which one she wants, because the one I was meant to wear matches with the vest you won't wear, because it's Slytherin green,
she shouted at Lupin.
I'll wear the vest, replied Lupin cheerfully, if you help me read Teddy his bedtime story.
That's fine. I like reading to Teddy,
she told him primly, and sauntered out of the room. Lupin immediately got up and followed her, paying no attention whatsoever to Quentin's knowing smirk.
Do you believe that?
Shouted Solange when they had left.
Now I've got to change it all back. What is wrong with them?
Solange, said Quentin in a long-suffering voice.
Please put the book away for tonight.
And don't look at that magazine, he added desperately, as she set the wedding planner aside, only to cast her eyes on a copy of Bride's Monthly.
We've only got 4 more weeks till the wedding, she shrieked.
And one of us is going to have a nervous breakdown by then, thought Quentin to himself. And I bet that's you. Elizabeth looked rather askance when Teddy grabbed a copy of The Goblin and the Ghoul and dragged it off to Lupin's bedroom.
You can read, and my dad can sit over there next to you,
he instructed her sternly as he hopped on the bed. Lupin tried to refrain from laughing. My 6-year-old is trying to help me get some, he thought. I've obviously failed miserably as a parent. Elizabeth did as she was instructed, and was pleased that the goblin turned out to be really friendly after all, and he and the ghoul became best mates once they'd realized they had things in common. Lupin kept kissing her neck and nipping in her earlobe while she read. Teddy's attention was focused entirely on the book, which apparently was one of his favorites.
Stop it! I'm trying to read,
she hissed.
He's going to fall asleep,
she told her, and as predicted, he was passed out before they were halfway through.
Don't go away,
he told her as he carried Teddy off to bed. Elizabeth sighed and wandered over to his wardrobe.
Is this the one you put the boggart in?
She asked him cautiously when he returned.
You know, when you had Neville turned into Snape wearing his grandmother's clothes.
Lupin grinned.
Yeah, it's the one. Don't worry, though. The boggart's gone. He was just for instructional purposes.
Sounds like he was for your entertainment purposes as well, she smiled at him. If you want me to stay here, I'm finding something to wear. I'm not going back downstairs and coming back up.
Well, you shouldn't.
You should just stay up here all the time, he told her cheerfully. Why go back and forth between floors?
You want me to move in with you on your floor?
Sure, why not? I am going to kill you, thought Elizabeth.
You are driving me insane, she hissed. One minute I'm just your friend, and the next minute you can't stand for me to be away from you. Can you not make up your mind?
Well, he said thoughtfully,
well, I don't ever think of you just my friend, and I rather like your company.
That's not quite how you put it when we're in bed together, thought Elizabeth to herself. She picked out a long, ruffled linen sleep shirt.
I guess I'll wear this, she said, and some of your muggle boxing shorts.
Forrest? He asked her politely.
Sure, but I like the drapes down on the bed. It's cozy. And don't forget the Muffliato spell.
The end. I promise I'm going to learn how to rewind. So that I can go back and cover up my stupid fucking mistakes. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed your, I don't know, what, 120-minute story. But it was almost 50 pages long. So, the end, and ta for now.